Dear brothers and sisters, good morning. I'm always a little interested and cautious in the labels that we use to label ourselves. Today we do a number of different ones: political party, Republican or Democrat, political ideology, conservative or liberal, what diet we're on, I'm carnivore, I'm vegan, I'm keto, I myself am carbo loading for the resurrection. So the reality is, dear brothers and sisters, that we label ourselves in a lot of different ways. And this is nothing new in the history of humanity. And I want to go back, and there's a reason for this, please stick with me for a second. I want to go back to the time of ancient Greece, where they had different philosophical schools. And unlike today, where philosophy is a discipline that you study in the university and it's kind of very abstract thinking, in the time of ancient Greece, it wasn't just a philosophy, it was a way of life, right? And it dominated your life as much as conservative or liberal does today. It was your way of life. It's how you identified. It's who you associated with. And there were a bunch of different schools of Greek philosophy. There were four that were major. And they were all labeled for different things. Epicurus and his followers met in a garden. And people thought there's no good name that comes from garden. So they called all of his followers Epicureans. Aristotle and his followers always wanted to see things with their own eyes and touch and taste and actually experience it and go out and study. So they got called the walkabouts, or peripatetics in Greek. Plato and his followers met at a place outside of town. I don't remember why it's named this, but it was called the Academia. So they got named the Academy, and they sold sporting goods. No, that's not true. Okay. It's where we do get the name Academy, though. However, there was a fourth group, and they met in a place in downtown Athens that was a painted porch, or a stoa palaike. And so they were known as the porch people, or Stoics. And Stoicism is enjoying, and if you'd asked me this 15 years ago, I would have never suspected it, but Stoicism is enjoying an enormous renaissance on TikTok and such various short videos. And if you're not aware of this, it's presumably because you don't have a Gen Z son. Because young men are eating up Stoicism as it's presented today. They're eating it up a lot. If you talk to young men, they've all heard of it. Like, especially those who are like really plugged in and they're talking about it. And there are a lot of different influencers who are, you know, promoting Stoicism. The Stoicism they present is not exactly the same as what you would find, you know, 2,300 years ago, but it's still there. And just like the first Stoicism, there are some good things and some bad things about it, and it's not my job to go in and go through all the different good things and bad things, and there are a number of very bad things the way it's presented today. But I will point out that it does have some connection to original Stoicism, and original Stoicism was purified and adopted by the church, just as the other great philosophies were. In particular, St. Ambrose. And I want to toss this out there. See that? See that right there? I want to toss out there that it was the Stoics who first listed four cardinal virtues. So obviously we adopt that today. But if you look at Stoicism as it's presented today, it has a lot to do with discipline, and with young men in the quest for having meaning in their life and purpose and discipline. And so of the four cardinal virtues, the one that every little video that I've seen on these internet sites that focuses on Stoicism is really always boiled down to one of the four. There's not a whole lot of talk about temperance. I mean, it's there, certainly not prudence, and a little bit of justice. But what's really at the root of all of this is the virtue we're going to talk about today. Fortitude. Fortitude. A certain moral strength and courage. And I think that that thirst in young men probably corresponds to a thirst in a lot of the rest of us. A thirst in a world that makes everything so easy, that makes every emotion so enormously important, that wants to go around and ta-ta all the time. And we know that that's missing something. People's response to that may be disordered in a variety of different ways, but there's something in the human heart that says there's something missing here. What we used to call character, moral fiber, self-discipline, and what the ancients called fortitude. Fortitude and all its allied virtues, whether it be patience, gentleness, courage, all of these, they're all there. So, dear brothers and sisters, today I want to talk about fortitude, and I'm not going to encourage you, as the current Stoics do, to ride on long plane rides and not eat or drink anything or watch any videos. I mean, that's fine if you want to do that, I suppose. But, you know, the church has her own tools of self-denial, and she calls us to our own level of discipline. And there's another great Greek word, not just porch people. It was athletic training, which was ascesis. And it's where we get asceticism from. Asceticism, fasting, vigils, etc. So I want to really look at fortitude and how important it is in the moral life. And so the first thing I'm going to say is that fortitude in itself, just as temperance in itself, is about modulating pleasure and desire, fortitude itself is about dealing with fear and pain. Okay? And everything that arises out of that. Thomas says the ultimate act of fortitude, obviously, is to stand firm when your life is in danger. That's why we honor the martyrs for their great virtue of fortitude. Right? But it's about dealing with the negative emotions, because it's not just that people sin through desire. We sin through desire a lot. But a lot of times we'll also sin through fear or anger. I know none of you have ever sinned through anger. But the reality is, dear brothers and sisters, that our emotional makeup is ultimately, if you get down to the fundamentals of it, it's about pursuing things and avoiding things. And we can sin by pursuing wrongly, but we can sin just as easily by avoiding wrongly. I've fussed people in my life for this, and then I do the exact same thing, where they will, I mean, look, guys, the time is going to come when I grow a fourth, like, leg or something, and I'm still not going to go to the doctor because I'm scared of going to the doctor, and I'm going to tell people, like, it'll be okay, it'll work itself out, right? And we all know that that's ridiculous, but we all do that in our own life, where there are things that we know we should do, but we cringe from the cost of it. We cringe from the cost of it. And so we don't. We chicken out. And so we don't just need a virtue that modulates our desire and our pleasure. We need one that strengthens us when we're about to chicken out. And that can be in holding on to gentleness when we want to just give in to anger. That can be in enduring pain when we want to just give up. That can be in facing fear when we don't want to even start in the first place. All of these things are connected to fortitude. But I want to go further today, especially based on our readings, and say that, like all the other virtues, fortitude doesn't exist in a vacuum. Fortitude only works if it's connected to the other virtues. And this is the universal testimony of the early saints. So the virtues only work if you have all of them. Now, that doesn't mean that it's pointless to work on them until you have all of them. You're a work in progress. But the basic idea that they had is like, well, don't congratulate yourself that you don't ever eat carbs if you fail at every other aspect of your life, right? Like, they work together. And so, I want to say about fortitude, that fortitude without love is a scary thing, and love without fortitude is a pathetic thing. And we see that reality with love today in the first reading. I enjoy this so much. Ezra, this is one of my favorite readings in the Old Testament. Ezra gets up, he reads the entire five books of Moses, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, and people listen to that. Presumably they had never heard it all together at the same time. And they're freaking out, okay? It's understandable. They're like crying and everything. And Ezra cries out, like, hey, stop crying. Okay. Today is holy to the Lord your God. Rejoice. Go eat rich foods and drink rich drinks. This, by the way, is the reading that we get in the Liturgy of the Hours for every Sunday of Lent for the first four weekends to remind you that Sundays are not supposed to be a day of penance, right? But here it is, this beautiful reality of them hearing the burden of the law and Ezra responding what? Do not be sad in this day, for rejoicing in the Lord must be your strength. How are you going to face the burden of the law? How are you going to find the strength, the fortitude to face the burden of the law? You have to have love. Rejoicing in the Lord must be your strength. Dear brothers and sisters, if you ever sat down and listed all the things that you did for your spouse, for your kids, or your grandkids, and just took them out of that context, it would look incredibly crushing. How could I ever do all that? I look at y'all and think the same thing. I'm like, how do you show up for all these games and constantly wake up in the middle of the night and deal with all this foolishness? I don't get it. But I do get it. Love gives you strength. And so if it ever seems that the burden of the gospel is too much for our fortitude, which may well be, one of the things we can analyze is, do I love Christ as much as I think I do? Okay, this is a really lame analogy, but I didn't give a full homily yesterday, so I'm kind of thinking of these things on the spot, so forgive me. This is what you have to deal with now, because I didn't test it out at the 4 o'clock mass. Sometimes, you know, heaven throws up on my carpet, just like my cats do. And yet, when my cats do it, I'm like, I'm going to give you away. But I still clean it up, right? And I don't complain about it too much. And yet, when heaven throws up on my carpet, I'm like, oh, the world is over. I can't deal with this. And wouldn't it be a terribly sad thing if on the Last Judgment I found out I loved my cats more than Jesus? If the burdens seem too much, it might be because our love is too small. Rejoicing in the Lord must be your strength. And that's what the Stoics got wrong, by the way. They focused all on the discipline and none of the motivation for the discipline. None of the motivation for the discipline. And that brings us to the second reading, or the gospel, but the second reading I want to bring up. It says, Jesus returned to Galilee in the power of the Spirit. He comes out of the desert. He's in the power of the Spirit. In English, the word force, right? Force has the same root as fortitude. There's a power, a force that comes in this moral strength. And Jesus, in the Spirit, comes out filled with fortitude. One of the seven gifts of the Spirit is also the name fortitude or courage, and we'll come back to that in Easter. But he comes filled with fortitude. And so, dear brothers and sisters, this is the second thing I want to tell you from the scriptures today. That if fortitude is measured by our love and vice versa, also fortitude is always best when it's for the sake of mission. When it's for the sake of mission. People will sometimes look at priests and say our life is hard, and I think that you're crazy. And sometimes people look at priests and say our life is really easy, and I think you're also crazy. But the reality is this, the same as everybody else. It's a lot easier to bear the burdens that come in our life if we're focused on the mission. Right? And that's true of all of us. I mean, when you think of the great inventors and innovators and business creators, they went through a lot of stuff to get where they are. They even used to have a VH1 show, What Driven, is that it? Something like that. Okay. But that's because they were able to exercise fortitude for the sake of mission. When I was at St. Thomas More, we used to have Dad's League flag football. It was only flagged if the person had the ball. Other than that, it was all of us really tackling each other without mats. And I played line, and probably the best shape I've ever been in my adult life, because I would get up every morning and like eat only protein and exercise and workout, because I didn't want to get knocked down the next time I saw these dads in my parish, right? It was easy to do because of mission. There was a reason for it. And dear brothers and sisters, if we just look at the different difficulties of the spiritual life, whether it be fasting or getting up early or denying ourselves our temptations, it can become really difficult to do if we don't have a sense of mission. And that's why I am so utterly convinced, I've told you this so many times before, I'm so utterly convinced that one of the reasons we do so much less than our forebears is because we're so utterly convinced that it doesn't matter. That you're going to get to heaven no matter what, that everybody gets the same reward in heaven, that Jesus doesn't care whether I eat or fast. If you're convinced that it doesn't matter, then you're never going to do it. Nobody just walks in and looks at the king cake and says, nah, right? I mean, you have to have a reason. You have to have a reason. You have to have a mission. I suppose some people who were, you know, corrupted from birth don't like king cake, but that's aside from the point, okay? Dear brothers and sisters, the church proposes different difficult things. Jesus proposes different difficult things, but they're always for a purpose. And if we sit there and tell ourselves, well, it doesn't matter if I sin, I can go to confession. It doesn't matter if I do wrong, I'll get to heaven anyway. It doesn't matter if I fast because Jesus doesn't care. Then we're never going to do anything because we're lacking fortitude, because we feel no reason to exercise fortitude, because we have no mission. And that doesn't mean to invent one. That doesn't mean you just go home today and say, well, I'm going to invent my mission. Mission comes from the word to send. To send. A mission is always given to you. And so, dear brothers and sisters, if you feel like you're lacking fortitude and courage in your spiritual life, then meditate on whether or not you've been sent. And the answer, of course, is you have. But meditate on what your vocation is, on what your mission is, on what your task is for the kingdom of God. Meditate on the fact that it matters. Meditate on the fact that God has not given anyone else your mission. And that if you fail in it, it won't get done. And if you live in the midst of that, and that compelling purpose, that compelling sending, that power of the Spirit, then you may still struggle with weakness, but at least you'll have found a reason for fortitude. God bless you all.